Now I will request his grace Adi Shankar to come and give his final comments on the topic, and I have come from chemicals.
Educated students, these two questions have to be thoroughly resolved, otherwise they can never become convinced in spiritual life. One is origin of the universe, and another one is origin of life. So unless we are very clear about these two things, one cannot develop proper faith in religion. Most often people are bewildered about these two items. In 13th century, earlier, there was one Bacon, a great scientist called Bacon. So he proposed that actually life arose by spontaneous generation. If you see the original thesis of Darwin, he writes there that originally breathed by the Creator into few or one. This is the writing of Darwin. He is saying life was originally breathed by the Creator into few or one. So this is Darwin's understanding. After that, Darwin says that according to the evolution theory that he proposed, the life forms changed one after another and many more life forms were created. That's why he goes wrong. But still, at least fundamentally speaking, Darwin accepted this fact that originally the living beings were breathed out by the Creator. In fact, the word breathed out is given in the Vedas also, same words. That absolute truth breathed out the entire creation. So Darwin certainly was not atheistic when he wrote his thesis. But later in 17th century, Bacon proposed a new theory called as theory of spontaneous generation. Well, he said that life arose by chance from the chemicals. And in 19th century, Louis Pasteur dealt with a death blow, again proving that life cannot arise from chemicals. So in this way, in the scientist community, that the atheistic people say, whether they are scientists or not, that's another question. There are two classes, atheistic people and people who are law abiders of God. So the law abiders of God, they learn from God himself through the Vedas that the life was created by God in this creation. God created human beings, he created animals, and then later on he created such living beings which could multiply in large numbers. Whereas the atheistic people, they want to deny God, so they say life arose from chemicals. So we will briefly try to understand this theory of spontaneous generation on how weak grounds it is standing. By hearing that, one can very easily dismiss this bogus theory of spontaneous generation. When Dawkins, the scientist who wrote the book about the spontaneous generation, he made a statement in the preface. He said, this book should be read almost as if it is scientific fiction. This was his own statement about his book. Sushirada Bhagavan Kisa. Did you hear me attentively? He says, this book should be read as if almost it is a scientific fiction. So he is making the whole world fools and is teaching them this philosophy of spontaneous generation. Let us still continue to hear him, although he treats us as fools. But we continue to hear what he says, we further say. He says there are about five steps how the life arose. Initially, there was a primitive atmosphere with carbon dioxide, methane, water vapor, like that there are a few chemicals. And from that life arose. How? Maybe through lightning, or through volcanoes, or through some treatment, amino acids formed from this primitive atmosphere. So this is his proposal. So now amino acids are formed. What happened next? Second step is an organic soup formed. How? Actually, these amino acids, if they remain in the atmosphere, then what will happen? By lightning, they will immediately become decomposed. Then he proposed these amino acids, they entered into an ocean themselves. And now it appears to be a safer thing that they have entered into oceans now. Now the organic soup is very safe now. But then, how can they form proteins later? Because now scientists were put into a trouble even when forming the amino acids. Just see how it is. Miller, in 1953, he conducted an experiment to check out the formation of amino acids from these basic elements like methane and things like that. So when he was trying in his laboratory, he sent electricity and he was trying. And 4 amino acids were formed out of the 20 amino acids that are required for the formation of life, life-giving proteins. So when he was conducting the experiment, he did it in a very closed, reducing atmosphere. Reducing atmosphere means there is no free flow of oxygen. And so Miller presumed that when life came originally, there must have been reducing conditions. That means there should not have been any oxygen in the atmosphere. But there were other scientists who argued, no, 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 oxygen has to be there. Why? Because two things. If oxygen was there, then even the first amino acid cannot form. There is no question of amino acids forming if oxygen were there. And if oxygen is not there, then the cosmic rays will immediately dry up the whole soul. So you don't know, on both sides you are attacked. You get the point? If oxygen is there, amino acids cannot form. If oxygen were not there, the cosmic rays will immediately dry them up. Then how can the organic soul form? Scientists have no answer. So the very basic step of the formation of life is thoroughly defeated. And nobody can give any answer to this. Let us assume, let us forget this defeat in the first step. Let us go to the second step. Now that the organic soup has formed, and now the amino acids are formed, let us assume. And even after they are formed, as I said, they cannot remain in the atmosphere. Why? Because if there is ultraviolet radiation, immediately they will be decomposed and become useless. So that's why they have to enter into the ocean, and then the organic soup can be safer. But then everyone knows very well, inside the water there is no polymerization. You know what is polymerization? Linking of many molecules to form a large molecule, isn't it? So polymerization cannot take place. You don't expect synthesis to take place, whereas you expect only dissolution to take place in water. Then somebody can question, if the soup entered the water, then instead of dissolution, how do you expect synthesis to take place? So it cannot take place. So some scientists say, no, it didn't enter water, it remained outside. Then again the same problem, what will you do with ultraviolet radiation? So second step also we are thoroughly defeated. So even if you assume that we don't know how it happened, let us assume that somehow the amino acids were there and they came together to form proteins. Still there are over 100 amino acids available, and out of that only 20 of them are required for making the life-giving protein. Out of that. Not only that, now scientists know very well that even those 20 amino acids, among in amino acids there are left-handed and right-handed amino acids. And all these 20 amino acids are left-handed. So out of those 100 different amino acids, you have to choose 20, and out of those 20, they all have to be left-handed. Only then the life-giving protein can form. Please mind you, doctors know very well how intricate is this amino acid combination to form protein. Because even a slight change in this can not lead to formation of life. So taking this into account, a simple example can be given. Say for example, you have 100 types of beans. You have 100 different types of beans. And half of them are red and half of them are white. So anybody can understand, explain the analogy what it is? So 100 types of beans represent 100 amino acids. Half of them are red, half of them are white. What do they represent? Left handed and right handed. So now you take your scoop and put it into the collection of beans, and when you take the scoop, all of them should be red. That's the first thing. That means they all should be left-handed, right? Not only that, out of the 100 varieties of beans, only 20 should be there. Not all should be there. Only 20 varieties should come into the scope. How much probability is there for this? So, scientists made a calculation. It is 1 divided by 10 to the power of 113. This is the probability. If you have studied probability in mathematics, you will know that 1 divided by 10 to the power 50 is considered a practical impossibility. Scientists say that such an event cannot take place. You discard it immediately. 10 to the power 113 is more than the all available atoms within the universe. Can you imagine? That is 10 to the power 113. So 1 divided by 10 to the power 113 is non-existent, according to mathematicians themselves. So even if we still assume that somehow the amino acids came together, only those 20 acids only came together, and all of them are left-handed, even if you assume like that, still, after that they have to come together to form proteins, isn't it? And even in proteins, some proteins are actually forming the structural material, and other proteins are forming enzymes. Enzymes are very essential. Without enzymes, the cell will die, isn't it? So the formation of the protein, the enzymes are required. So for this enzyme to form, the chance for 2000 proteins serving as enzymes is 1 divided by 10 to the power of 40,000. Can you imagine? So one great scientist, biologist named Hoyle, he made a statement that he said, even if the whole universe is filled with organic soup, life cannot arise, he said. Because that is the probability that we are talking here. Even if you have whole universe of organic soup, still life cannot arise, because that is the kind of probability that you are getting from here. Not only that, even if you assume that protein has somehow formed due to that, still over and above that, what has to form? Membrane has to form. And what is this membrane? It is not ordinary. It is not just protein. It contains fat, sugar and protein. And this membrane is extremely complex to form. And not only that, after this membrane has formed, nobody knows how it formed, but if you assume that it has formed, after that comes the nucleotides, which are actually containing the genetic code. So these are actually structural units of DNA. So they have to form. Now, nobody knows the answer to this question, whether DNA came first or protein came first. Because for protein to form, there is a prerequisite of DNA. And DNA needs the presence of protein. It is like asking whether chicken came first or egg came first. Which came first? So some scientists are saying both of them came at the same time. How can they come at the same time? It's a figment of imagination. So whether DNA came first or protein came first, nobody knows the answer to this question. So after all these things, he is writing, Dawkins is writing, now by the formation of this molecule, somehow the atom started behaving in a way by which it started showing life symptoms. Don't ask how it exhibited life symptoms. This we are talking about the most basic living organism, what we are talking now, not the complex. What we have now is so complex living organisms that we see. So we can understand this is the kind of philosophy being spoken in this spontaneous generation. At every step, they face a punch on the nose. At every step. Still they are saying, my nose is all right, nothing has happened. At every step. In fact, the punch is also given by scientists only. One fellow finds it, another fellow gives a punch. At every step you can find out like that. So it is a baseless proposition which is made by godless people who simply want to reject God for the sake of rejecting Him. That's all. They want to say that somehow or other life has come. Don't ask us how. Life came without God. That's all we know. We don't want God in the picture. So, this is the kind of imagination that is made. Not only that, even if one assumes that somehow or other life has come like this and life has evolved into higher and higher forms, then we can go to the record of the fossils. Researcher, like Jeremy Pruitt, was making some nice points. So Darwin, when he came out with this theory about the evolution, he anticipated that all the fossils should show a particular kind of orientation. First you have unicellular organism, and then they develop more and more and more, and you have reptiles, you have vertebrates, you know, you have developed organisms when you go higher and higher. So he expected that a beautiful orientation of all the fossils are going to come, and my theory is going to be proved. But then when they dug out the fossils, they didn't find any similarity. I mean, they didn't find the order that Darwin anticipated. In fact, Darwin, even before they dug out the fossils, Darwin made a statement. If the fossils are not according to the orientation that we anticipate, then my theory is going to face a fatal reaction. But then they dug out, but he was very prejudiced. So he said, we don't have enough fossil evidence to show now. Maybe if we dig out more, probably we can find out. In between, some scientists came and they said, of course, Darwin is right. These are following punctual equilibrium, they said. They introduced a new theory. They said, the same species may be there, but all of a sudden there may be evolution for some period of time, and then it stops. And then species are going on, coming in the same fashion. And then again there is evolution. So this is called as punctuated equilibrium. So even if you see punctuated equilibrium, at point where there is punctuated equilibrium taking place, in those places you can expect evolution, right? Even there, they could not show one. Even in the recent researches, we have 100 million fossils available all over the world. And those people in the area of fossil research, one of the greatest scientists has made an open declaration that there cannot be any more fossil evidences from our side. We have exhausted everything on Earth. And they say that Darwin's theory cannot be fitted in any way by arranging these fossils. Because if you expect according to Darwin's theory, one species should gradually transform into another. But what you find, they have drawn a graph. The one species existing, at another region you find another species existing, they have no similarity whatsoever. Besides that, human skulls and animal skulls have all existed at the same time. 4 million years ago they have dug out human skulls and animal skulls at the same point. Chimpanzee remains chimpanzee, dog remains a dog, human being remains a human being. They have taken out even insects, tiny insects, several thousands of years ago, and even now the same insects are existing. It's not that they have become transformed. In front of our eyes, we don't see monkeys becoming human beings. In the past, we didn't see. Like it is said, any scientific theory, when you speak of, first step is observation. You make the observation and you arrive at that theory, right? Like you all do in your laboratory. First you make an observation and then you arrive at theory. Then you have to prove the theory. How? By experimentation. Then you do experimentation and support the theory. Just see our experiment is working. And through experimentation you should be able to show that the theory is valid. So what you observed is also valid. You should be able to show that. Now taking the theory of evolution, if you see, the observation made by them is from their own mental speculation, first of all. It is not a practical observation made like you see in the laboratory. Because they say such observation cannot be made because it happened long ago. Okay. So you have made a theory now. So can you prove the theory using experiment? Can you show in front of our eyes how a monkey is becoming a human being? So I have got several books which show there are many monkey skulls, there are many human skulls, practically no similarity. So they are using a cat and a tiger and saying that they are from the same family, but there is no similarity in their traits or qualities, if you see. So this is simply a figment of man's imagination, such a bogus theory, which is actually oriented towards clearing way for the atheist so that God can be brushed aside. So we can go on speaking a lot about it. There is a book written by two famous scientists called Michael Cremo and Richard L. Thompson. It's called Forbidden Archaeology. You should read that very interesting book. It exposes all the bogus researches that were done in the past and how the scientists have been cheating for so many years in the past. So these two great scientists, the American TV, they came forward to present this book, a brief presentation of this book, Forbidden Archaeology. And all the scientists became very alert. They are using the word forbidden, so they must be showing something against science. So they all became very interested. When the TV serial was shown, the whole of America became shaken up because Darwin's evolution theory was smashed into pieces in this area. And then scientists became very, very alarmed. And they said, you are shaking the faith of people in us. How will people give us research grants? How will people give so much money for space research? How will people give money for the universities? So they became very, very apprehensive about this. And they made a request that this series should not be shown in the television. And the television people found a great joy in again showing it. They called for these people and said, second time they advertised, The serial which scientists don't want to see. Again they showed it second time. Now in Kansas State University, it's openly declared that they have rejected Darwin's evolution theory from their books. They have published new books without the theory. And following in the footsteps of Kansas State University, many other universities also have began to reject. Now, worldwide, there is a great concern amongst all the people, how this theory has been cheating the people for the past 2 centuries. People have been cheated like this. So, everyone has become very alert now, not to accept any scientific theory blindly. It's only carrying the name scientific. One very great scientist called Smile, he made a nice statement. He said, scientists, over a period of time, in the name of taking people out of the religious mythology, have taken them to a zone of myth created by their own intelligence. That's a wonderful intelligence statement. He says, scientists have removed people from the religious mythology, but where have they taken them? To a myth created by their own fertile 200-300 grams brain. Few grams of brain, they have created their own myth. And they are making, forcing people to believe. Many scientists who did not believe in Darwin's evolution theory were expelled from their jobs. Let's see the irony. So this is the plight of modern man who tries to impose what he thinks is true. Something else is true, but he doesn't want to accept God's plan. So he wants to impose the so-called truth created by his own fertile brain in the minds of people. So now that they could not prove how life came from a primordial soup in this earth, and the conditions they told you now are so contradictory and so opposed that they have no way to prove it. Now scientists are saying there must have been some other better conditions in some other planet where the life forms must have been created, and then they must have been sent to this planet. That's called a snowball theory. So they have come up with a new theory. Again the same old attitude as atheism. See, they are unable to prove how life was created in this planet, so they want to extend the problem to another planet, that's all. They are just pushing the problem from here to another planet. Now the question can be asked, how did life come there? Then they imagine that the conditions must have been suitable, that's all, don't ask for that. See the irony. So modern doctors have become more vigilant now. In Russia there is an institute called the Soul Research Institute. There is a surgeon there who has been working for 30 years. So he has made a statement that I have been seeing men dying in my front. And as soon as a man dies, immediately the eyes lose the luster. Immediately we can see the body metabolism stops, the heartbeat is stopping, and the red color blood turns into white, and everything becomes inactive. And one can very clearly see something, very essential element in the body missing from the body. So he has become very curious to find out what is this Atma or the soul. Such an incomprehensible thing. What is it in the body that is like a prime mover in the body, which is making the body work so wonderfully? It's very amazing. See, we are talking of secretion of chemicals from the body when you get angry or when you get lusty or when you get emotional. This is no surprise at all. What does the chemical secretion in your body explain about the experience? A very beautiful question was asked Premier Prabhu to everyone, isn't it? Like if you take a hammer and a pin and you hit the pin, and when it hits your finger, so many reactions can be studied by a doctor. When you are hitting, some cells are compressed in the body. And when the cells are compressed, the nociceptors, which are the nerve endings, they are compressed. And then there is a secretion of electrochemicals. And they pass through the nerve fibers, they are passing electric signals to the brain. Of course, these reach the brain, and there are neuronal cells which receive this signal. But what is the next step? There is a perception of pain, which leads to secondary behavior. Ah! I get a shout. Isn't it? You wave the hands. So, these are all physical descriptions. You know, waving the hand or the secretion of electrochemical. But how can you amount for the pain that you experience? Who is the perceiver of pain or pleasure? Like you put a gulab jamun, you feel pleasure. Isn't it? Somebody pricks you with a pin, you feel pain. Who is the experiencer of the pain or pleasure? That is our question. Most fundamental question, which science cannot answer, because they have no understanding of the soul. So without understanding the knowledge of the soul, from which the consciousness arises, there is no possibility of explaining life. When you say, when you get angry, this particular sensor, these fibers, C fibers are firing, or delta fibers are firing, it's very easy to say that. But simply, this is only an external phenomenon that you are talking about, a physical description, which is a very cheap thing. We are asking about the experience. Who is the experiencer? Nobody can answer this question. So unless one goes to the fundamental aspect of life, which is Atma itself. So Atma is actually the prime mover of the body. When Atma leaves the body, then the body is termed dead. In fact, it was only thought of to be a hypothesis long ago, the knowledge of Atma. But now in the field of science, scientists have taken so much interest in understanding the working of the soul and the body through the past life memories, through near-death experiences, out-of-body experiences. Even scientists are also trying to research and find out how this most subtle phenomenon, namely the Atma, how is it working in the body? What happens when you leave the body? How the life comes into picture? So they are very curious to know. But their curiosity will not lead us to knowledge, maybe for even next several million years. Who knows? They may take millions of years to arrive at the truth, what life is and how the Atma and God have relationship and all these things. So a fool may agree to wait for the scientist to arrive at the result, and he will mix with the, his body will mix with the sand over a period of time, within an order of few years. But one who is intelligent, he simply hears the knowledge and he accepts it. The Vedas are giving the knowledge, you have to just hear it, understand it. Try to implement what the Vedas say, and you will realize you are not the body, you are the soul. But if you want to experiment in your laboratory, by putting it in a pipette or burette, trying to find out where is the soul, you will never be able to arrive at it. For that matter, even there are subtle material things which cannot be seen with our eyes. Like electron cannot be seen, it's matter. Electron is material. Similarly, you cannot see air. But the entire field of turbo machinery and thermodynamics is going on very wonderfully without people seeing the air with their own eyes. Similarly, we can talk about so many things. Solids, liquids, gases, plasma. When you go like that, they are going on in the order of subtlety. How many people have seen the mind? Nobody has seen the mind. But the entire field of psychology is roaring and flourishing more and more. Psychology, psychiatry, and now even parapsychology is now progressing now. So we can understand that intelligent scientists do not mind studying a subject which is not easily perceivable by the senses. That is the meaning of intelligent scientist. There are many scientists who are studying such subtle things which are also material, which can't be perceived with your eyes, with your ears, with your nose, with your tongue, with your skin. Still they accept that such things exist. Even the ensembles and statistical models which you make, you cannot see them. They are made in the mind only. No? They are just made in a fiction, in the mind. But they are accepted by the scientists even today. In the same way, the Atma is existing on a very subtle platform of Satchidananda. It is very difficult to perceive. Somebody may say, if it is so difficult to perceive, then why break our head? Just forget it. Let us go on with our normal life. But the nature will not allow you to go on. That is the real problem. Even if one says, okay, I don't want to know about the soul, let me just, there are some diseases that are going to come and I have to suffer something in this world. I don't mind, let me live. But the nature will not allow you to live. The nature will force you to die. Everyone has to die. Everyone has to get old. So your intelligent man has to ask, what is the meaning of life? If one takes this spontaneous generation, which is baseless, as the origin of life, then life has no meaning. This world is simply a sum of atoms and molecules, that's all. We have no understanding of what is life. So that is why scientists have become so mean-minded that in the modern times they are saying, even if there is a murderer, don't take it seriously, don't give him punishment. Because he is acting according to his genes. This is their answer. Can you imagine? Tomorrow you can do anything. There is no ethics, there is no morals, you can do any nonsense and blame your genes for that. That's all. This is the platform to which scientists are hurling down the entire human population of the world today. In the name of intellectualism, they are trying to justify nonsensical behavior of human beings to be proper, simply blaming the genes. So we have to be very careful before we fall prey to such bogus theories. On the other hand, we have the Vedas, which are spoken by pure souls. You see, everyone who is the recipient and who is the speaker of the Vedas, see Jesus, how pure he was. See Muhammad, see Vyasdev, Narada Muni, Shukadeva Goswami, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So all the people coming in the disciplic line, you can see, they all are so pure hearted and leading such a pure life. They have set their own example in their personal lives. And people who followed them also have led very, very pure lives. So now the choice is up to you. Whether you want to accept the path that is laid forth by pure Mahatmas, pure souls, who have lived a pure life and achieved God, you want to follow them? Or you want to follow the scientists who say that life has no meaning, the world is full of molecules, you can do whatever nonsense you want and attribute it to genes, and just live your life in the way your mind dictates you, live like an animal and go to hell. So whom do you want to follow? You want to follow these great pure devotees, or you want to follow the bogus scientists? So this is up to you. So anybody who is more interested, you can take reference books from us. We have books on origin of life, and actually these books are written by scientists only. Thanks to all those scientists. We salute them because they are helping us to expose all these bogus theories. So those scientists also were God conscious scientists. So they could very easily expose the cheaters in the field. So we also want many, many scientists, all of you assembled here today, every one of you is a very valuable jewel in society. Because it is said, today's youth are tomorrow's leaders. So every one of you may join a big company. Many of our students are already in TCS and Telco and Infosys and many such companies. So tomorrow, they may even begin a company like Infosys or Telco. They may become very mature after 20, 30 years. And they may be guiding the lives of hundreds and thousands of people. So the purpose for which we are teaching the educated generation by giving this knowledge is that if you fundamentally become very convinced in the understanding that everything originally comes from God, and how without putting God in the center of our life, life has practically no meaning. It is an impossibility which can be proved even through the eyes of science. When you understand it thoroughly, then you can become convinced, and you can also convince hundreds of people to become God conscious. Then this world can become truly civilized. Otherwise, the way the knowledge is, the so-called knowledge is being taught now. The book which I read, I could speak only a small drop of it. If you read the book, it is so powerfully written by the scientists themselves, how much cheating is going on in the field of science. So when you read it, you can understand for yourself. So you can expose the reality to the people. It is so important. So in future, when all of you advance in Krishna consciousness and take up leading positions in society, we have to write books for children where you can expose all these truths to them. Now if you go to elementary school or high school, they are teaching, in the board they put up the pictures. They put the picture of a monkey and a man. Say that, you know, man came from the monkey, and all children have to memorize that. Why? Why should they be cheated like this? Tomorrow you take lead and you publish books for the school children, and you start schools where you will people who are not populated. And why he told them that they were like monkeys? Because monkeys, they have dozens of girlfriends in the forest. Their senses are uncontrolled. Their mind and senses go crazy, and they speak whatever they want. They do all nonsense. So those people who say man came from monkey, their behavior is like monkeys. That's why they say like that. So it is very important for us to teach the upcoming children. Otherwise children are not cheated. Just go to the schools now, how children are so much cheated. And when they grow up, they have no understanding of God. They have no understanding of the origin of universe or origin of life. And they carry this wrong understanding. And that's why they become atheists and they come to colleges. And the Prabhupada said, the universities are spiritual slaughterhouses, he said. What is a slaughterhouse? Slaughterhouse is a place where the cows are slaughtered in millions using guillotine machines. In the same way, nowadays colleges are becoming spiritual slaughterhouses where students assemble and all their energy is sucked by imposing data, figures, charts, information, formulae, tables, and they have to cram all these things and impose it on their mind and vomit it in the examination. When they pass out, they don't know anything what they study in the college. So this is the kind of education that is given in the colleges today. And majority of them is bogus, like the one which you are reading today. And the students with little knowledge They start arguing, how did life come from? Man came from monkey. I said, they have studied. You go and study. Try to understand how the spontaneous generation theory is so thoroughly baffled. You cannot explain even one step. The very first step is baseless, can be defeated. So all of you are very fascinating people assembled here today, because all of you are devotees who are all connected to some program, weekly program, and you are connected to a devotee who comes to your college to give programs. So learn the philosophy of Krishna consciousness very nicely. Srila Prabhupada, when he was 75 years old, at such an old age, he went to America to preach. And he convinced the scientists of America, the doctorates of America, to become great devotees of Krishna. All of you are so young, in blooming youth, and you have so much vigor, you have so much wisdom, and you have so much intellect by which you can very easily understand the subject matter. So Prabhupada requested his disciples and followers that you learn the philosophy of Krishna consciousness nicely and present it in a scientific perspective. So you learn science also, you learn Krishna consciousness also, and make people understand how there is a supreme intelligence that is governing the entire universe, who is governing the movement of every living being. So such a person is only called as a spiritual scientist. So every one of you here is a spiritual scientist. So cherish this knowledge, develop yourself, and convince your friends, relatives, everyone to become devotees of Krishna. So we will not waste our life, we will not waste even a moment in our life. Every moment of our life should be utilized in becoming more and more Krishna conscious. Not only that, we also want to give it to as many people as possible before we die. We should reach thousands of people and give this knowledge to them before we take our last breath. So that all those people who are being cheated by the atheistic scientists will be reclaimed and put back in the lotus feet of Krishna. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.